Go ahead, Mr. Conrad.
Well, thank you. Good morning. This is an regular meeting of the New York Pension Board, Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee, Tuesday, November 23rd, about 9:02 a.m. Could we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Bell?
Here.
Mr. Benson?
Present.
Mr. Campbell?
Here.
Ms. Ford?
Here.
Ms. King? Not present as yet. Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Kovak is excused, and Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Quorum.
Thank you. We're going to jump into item 7A on the agenda, which is a report from BLB&G. This is a closed session item, so please be advised that the New York Pension Board will vote to convene closed session. The following item, item A, pending litigation report as provided in section 19.851G, Wisconsin State Statutes, to confer with legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted by the board with respect to litigation in which it is or is likely to become involved. The board will then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. Could we have a roll call?
We need a motion.
Could we have a motion? Excuse me.
Mr. Campbell, I'll make the motion to go into closed session.
Could we have a second?
Bell, second.
Thank you. A roll call, please.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Benson?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Ms. King? Not present as yet. Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
And Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Quorum. And if you just say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
Okay, we have closed session at 9:04.
Thank you.
And we'll now proceed to open session.
Second here to readmit the public, please.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. It's now 9:30, and we're back in open session, and we will go to the front of the agenda. Item number one, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting held October 26, 2021. Do we have a motion to approve?
That's how we'll move.
Thank you. We have a second to approve the minutes.
Bell, second.
All right. Motion has been made and seconded. Any objections to those minutes? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. The next item, unfortunately, I think the Abbott Capital Private Equity Investor side letter is being put over till 10 o'clock. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, Rudy.
All right, so we'll reserve that, and we'll go on to number three, which is the investment committee report. And who'll be giving that today?
Mr. Bell, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll be giving that report today.
All right, you may proceed.
This is regarding the November 11th, 2021 Investment Committee Report. At its November 11th meeting, Callan provided an update on the fund real estate portfolio, and then the committee went into closed session to receive an update from Callan regarding the hedge fund of fund manager search, which was approved in September. The committee decided to hold over the approval of hedge funds of fund manager search pilot agenda item to an upcoming meeting. We then went back in open session, and Callan provided a fixed income portfolio structure study presentation. And after some discussion, the committee approved the fixed income structure identified as MIX 3 within Callan's presentation. The new fixed income structure replaces the U.S. Bloomberg Barclays Aggregate Bond Index with the U.S. Government Index, which reduces the overall allocation to the index from 36% down to 25% of the funds allocation, and it increases the allocation to REAMS from 32% to 45% of the fund's fixed income allocation. Loomis sales allocation will be reduced slightly from 32% to 30% of the fund's fixed income allocation. According to Callan's presentation, the new mix is expected to reduce the tracking error to the aggregate index, reduce correlation to public equity, increase the information ratio, and provide similar alpha potential compared to the fund's current fixed income structure. Next, staff presented a routine due diligence report on Abbott Capital, one of the fund's private equity fund of fund managers, and then presented the third quarter performance report. Highlight of the performance report showed that the fund's market value remains above $6 billion, and the one-year return as of September 30th, 2021 is 25.7% net of fees, representing 7.7% of excess returns above the benchmark. Finally, regarding approvals, the investment committee recommends approval of the following item. Approval of fixed income structure to be changed to the mixed three option that was presented. Chairman, that concludes my report.
Thank you. I do notice I skipped the chief investment officer's report, so we'll be going back to that after we take care of the approval item. On the agenda is a request to approve the fixed income structure mixed three as recommended by the investment committee. Is there a motion to approve that item?
Bell, a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Is there a second?
Campbell, I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Is there any further discussion on the item? Hearing none, is there any objection to approval of the fixed income structure mix three as recommended by the committee? Hearing no objection.
Well, Mr. Conrad, Mr. Klusman, just
go ahead.
Consistent with my vote at the committee, I voted no.
All right. So I will record Mr. Klusman's, but we will record Mr. Klusman's voting no. Any further objections? Hearing none, the matter passes with one no vote. Going back to the Chief Investment Officer's report, Mr. Zilber, you have anything to report?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually don't have anything to report. Today, we do have an upcoming December 9th Investment Committee meeting. The package will be going out next Friday, and I'll turn it over to Eric to give a performance update.
All right, thank you. You may proceed, Mr. Sauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. The fund ended the month of October with a value of $6.12 billion, the return of 2.2% gross of fees for the month. Underperformed the blended benchmark by approximately 10 basis points. And you can see in the table to the right that the fund has outperformed over the year to date, 1, 5, 10, and 20-year periods, while slightly underperforming over the 15-year period on a net fee basis. The main drivers of the October relative performance, style bias was the main detractor, and that was primarily from the fund's strategic value and small cap exposures. Within manager selection, another detractor was Brandis, which you'll remember is our international value manager that's actually benchmarked against a core benchmark. So we'd expect them to underperform a bit in a month when value lags. And then offsetting some of that underperformance was the fund's real estate managers, and this was primarily Prologis, which is the fund's logistics-focused manager. So, the logistics sector had just another really outstanding quarter. They've been having very strong returns as, this whole shift that everyone's talked about from traditional retail to e-commerce, that really, really benefits the logistics sector. So the returns have continued to be very strong there. As of November 19th, The fund is up about 0.6% in November, which brings the year-to-date return to approximately 16.5% net of fees, and the approximate value to $6.16 billion. 11 out of the fund's 15 active mandates are outperforming net of fees, and the total fund, along with all of the fund's asset classes, are exceeding their respective benchmarks year-to-date net of fees. Year-to-date, the fund has generated investment gains of $905.4 million, paid out benefits and expenses of $384.0 million, and has received contributions of $104.7 million. This month, we'll be making the following withdrawals to cover benefits and expenses, $12 million from the S&P 500 Index, $7.5 million from DFA's U.S. Small Cap Value, $5.5 million from Poland, $4.5 million from Earnest, $3.5 million from Castle Ark, $3 million from MFS, and $2 million from the DFA U.S. Large Cap Value account. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
Any questions for Mr. Seller? Hearing none, then we will thank you for your report, and we will move on to item number four, new business. First item is retirement, death claims, and refunds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Jerry Allen. So in the packet this month, we have a normal routine approvals for retirement, death claims, and refunds for the month of October. And I have no exceptions to report at this point. If anybody has any questions or comments, I'd be glad to take them now or later. But we do need a motion to approve the payroll, as usual.
All right. Do we have a motion to approve the payroll?
Mr. Campbell, I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Can you second that motion?
Thank you for the second. Any objections? Hearing none, the motion is approved. The next item is conference requests.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jerry again. There are no current conference requests for this month.
All right, thank you. Next item is pension board election results, member at large election.
Thank you. An election was tallied on the 5th of November, Friday, November 5th. According to the board rules for the at-large member election, there were two candidates, Michelle Mickey Pearsall from MMSD, and Matthew Bell, Sergeant Matthew Bell from the Milwaukee Police Department. The ballots were counted that morning, and Mr. Bell prevailed with a count of 1,279 votes compared to 789 votes for Ms. Pearsall. And so I guess I would ask the board to accept this report and place on file as certification of this election.
All right, the matter was placed on file. Congratulations, Mr. Bell. The next item is proposed 2022 board and committee meeting dates.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. The staff has prepared a tentative schedule or proposed schedule of dates after consultation with you know, our normal calendar, and there was one trustee that did ask for some consideration to avoid some conflicts in his schedule. And so this year is a little bit different. We're proposing, generally speaking, that the board meetings be moved to the fourth Tuesday of the month, but there are exceptions to that. Notably in January, in June, July, September, and looks like November as well. And so those dates were proposed to be Wednesday. But there are potentially other dates that would work. If anybody has any comments or questions about that, I guess we should take them now.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Any comments or questions on the proposed schedule?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, please.
Thanks. Jerry, could you just confirm, I think you might have spoken to this last time, but that the dates that are on Wednesday do not conflict with Finance and Personnel Committee? I know that would be an issue for both Mr. Kovac and...
Yes, we did take a look at that, and they do not conflict those dates. There was a date on June 29th, Wednesday, July 27th, Wednesday, November 23rd, Wednesday, and those are the Wednesday dates.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair? This is Mr. Campbell.
Mr. Campbell, go ahead.
I'm more than willing to change dates to Wednesday. I do want to note, though, that we have a mandatory executive command staff meeting either at 12 or 12:30 on Wednesdays. And if we are having a meeting in which we are expecting that we're going to go beyond that, could we make some kind of an accommodation to start earlier that day? I just would hate to have to choose between both of those meetings.
I think that we've been pretty consistent at finishing before noon. I think if we have a situation like that, we could first look at taking what I call the more significant items first and taking the routine items toward the end of the meeting. And if that's not sufficient, then I think we could start earlier if the members have no objection. Any other comments?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Campbell, again, I'm fine with that. I think that's a good idea. I think over the course of the last 3 years, we may have had two meetings that have gone past noon, and I think only one of those was unplanned that we go past noon. So I think that will work.
Yeah. We'll keep on top of it for you, Mr. Campbell. Just give you an advance notice if we think there's anything that's on the agenda, like presentations that would stretch out. Okay.
All right, hopefully we'll be able to address the needs of all the members in reference to scheduling. Let's see here. Our next item.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, if
yes,
I could. I did just try to cross-reference one more time. It looks like June 15th for the A&O committee. Does fall on an F&B scheduled date. I don't know if that's
okay.
Jerry can work out with the rest of the board, or if it doesn't work out, I can sit at F&B for Ms. Sava, and she can be on the A&O committee for ERS. We can work that out too, if that's the only date that works for everybody else.
But I think that also, this is Molly, I think that would also impact Mr. Kovac and also myself.
We have, looking at the calendar that we have, we're showing in the month of June, we're showing the F&P on the 8th and the 29th, but we can double check again. There seems to be some ambiguity about that. So I will call Chris Lee just to verify one or the other.
Okay, yeah, I just pulled up the calendar that they have on their city clerk's website, so to the extent that that's been changed, it might not have been updated there, or... So if you could just figure that out,
I'll double check that one. Thanks for bringing it to my attention.
All right, thank you.
All right, Jerry, do we have to take any action on this item, or we'll just leave this till we get the final next...
Yeah, there's no real action required. I mean... we'll publish meeting dates after we double check it, and it doesn't require a motion for this.
All right. Our next item is again a closed session item. So please be advised, the New Jersey Pension Board will convene a closed session on item E, which is consider and potentially take action regarding student disability benefits for non-compliance with re-exam requirements of the ordinance of the Ron Gilliam and this will be as provided under Section 1985.1G of the statutes, conferring with legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted by the board with respect to litigation in which the board is or is likely to become involved. The board may then vote to reconvene an open session following the closed session. Do we have a motion going to closed session on this item?
I will motion.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Do we have a second?
Benson can second.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Benson?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Thank you.
Ms. Ford?
Aye. Do you hear me?
Yes, thanks. Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Quorum, and say the time, please.
We have, it says 9:48 a.m.
Thanks, the recorder.
Being an open session. We'll give Mr. Siddiqui some time to arrange this.
Okay, you can go ahead.
Okay, thank you. It's 10:02, and we've come back in record time. Thank you, Mr. Siddiqui. Do I have a motion to suspend the benefit for non-compliance with re-exam requirements of the Milwaukee Code of Ordinance 36, and that is the benefit of being paid to Deron D. Gilliam? Do we have such a motion? Mr. Campbell, since you're familiar with the situation, do you think you can make the motion?
Mr. Campbell, I'll make the motion to suspend the benefit for non-compliance.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
Board seconds.
Thank you. Any objections to the motion? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you all. The next item is item F, review of Board Rule 2A2. Mr. Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a request from one of the trustees to review this item. It's there's a copy of it included in your package. And the highlighted text on the back, it's printed on two sides. The highlighted text on the back, it's just one sentence I'll read briefly. It says, the city comptroller, ex officio, or in the case of sickness or absence, is her deputy. And that relates to who are members of the board and who should, be present at board meetings. So there's a request to review this item and perhaps refer it to a committee, to the legislative committee for review and possible amendment. Since this item pertains to the city comptroller who's on maternity leave, family medical leave following a very blessed event, she has asked that it be held over until next month when she returns from her leave, so that she can have the courtesy of also addressing it with the rest of the board.
All right, so that matter will be carried over till the next meeting.
Mr. Chairman.
Are we ready for the to hear from the lawyers from Reinhardt? Since it's now 10:05.
I believe we have one of them on. And Claire, I think you can hear that as well, right? So she's on.
I am on, but I was not involved very much in this negotiation, so all questions will need to be answered by Reinhardt.
All right. Before we start, we have to go into closed session again. So please be advised that the pension board will convene in closed session on the following item: approval of Capital Private Equity Investors 2022 side letter. as provided in section 19.851 Wisconsin statutes, to deliberate and negotiate the purchase of public properties, the investment of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session. The board may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. Do we have a motion to go into closed session?
Mr. Benson?
I would motion.
Thank you. I will view that as a motion by Mr. Benson and a second by Mr. Bell. Any objections to convening a closed session to hear this item? All right, excuse me, we need a roll call vote, don't we?
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Benson?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
And Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Quorum, and please say the time and I'll pause the recorder.
All right, it's 10:07 a.m.
Thank you.
10:16, and we will reconvene in open session.
One second, please. All right, you can go ahead.
All right, thank you, Mr. Siddiqui. Is there a motion to approve the Abbott Capital Private Equity Investors 2022 Limited Partnership side letter?
Approval. Ford is approval.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. Is there a second?
Ms. King will second.
Thank you. Any objections to the motion? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. We'll go back on the agenda now to item 5, medical reports. Mr. Allen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your package, you have the normal monthly medical reports. These are pretty routine this month. The first report, as always, is the medical panel approvals report. The four items on these were routine re-exams, and they were all recommended for approval by the medical panel physicians. And then the second report is the second page is the medical council approvals report. These were also re-examinations that were routine, and they were all recommended for approval by the medical panel doctors that met in our offices. So we do need a motion, though, to accept the recommendation of the medical panel and the medical council.
All right, so do we have a motion to approve?
Ms. King will make that motion.
Thank you, Ms. King. Is there a second?
Campbell, I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. The motion passes. Next is unfinished business. Mr. Allen?
Thank you. We have legal opinions. Patrick, do you want to have any comments at this point?
No, thank you, Jerry, unless the board members have any questions.
Any questions for Mr. McLean?
Okay, or the same for outside counsel. So the only new items, new entries will be for part four service requests outside legal counsel. As you heard today, the Abbott Capital Private Equity Partner Investors matter was on the board today that you just took up. And then secondly, the LaSalle Property Fund, there's been a referral to Reinhardt on that is in October 14th, and that matter is proceeding. So that's really all we have to say on that report. On the pending legislation report, there was a communication file that was transmitted the Mayor's Task Force report on the pension system to the Finance and Personnel Committee. I have a little more to say about that in my executive director's report in a minute. But that was just routine, placed on file, held to the call of the chair, no action there. And really, that's the only update on any of those items on that page. A pretty unexciting report for this month.
All right. Seth, do we have your report?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item number one, personal update. We're still working with the ER to fill the network administrative position. That's still moving forward. And I want to note on item two, member services. We had new retirees in October of 43. 56 are currently anticipated for the November payroll. These numbers are pretty normal numbers for a monthly retirement, so they didn't seem to be a tremendous, in the end, a tremendous number of people that decided to retire as related to the city's new vaccination mandate. That seemed to be, despite all the phone calls and air pulling, that seemed to be not much of an issue in the end. Although people can still retire before the end of the year. I don't know that any people were suspended, but that was the plan. If anybody was not going to be in compliance at the end of October, they'd be suspended. But we haven't heard much about that, so I think it's sort of a non-event. The open enrollment is now concluded, and the city didn't hold fairs this year, so we had set up a couple virtual sessions, which were well attended, though, and we had a short presentation, and so that all seemed to go very well as well. On financial services, we met with the actuary and the outside financial auditor for our annual audit kickoff meeting, and they kick off the actual evaluation process too. And it usually involves going over schedule. It takes us well into July, June and July. And that seems to be on track at this point. Secondly, item B, we're working on calculating the retroactive payments that are due to some of the former MPSO members who are now retired on due to disability. That case was resolved in the appeals court level in favor of the plaintiffs, the retirees that were former MPSO members. And the city is not going to appeal it. And we expect to have the retros completed for the month of December for the benefit payroll then. I think notably it was reported that Local 215 has decided to appeal the case to the state Supreme Court. Their complaint was set aside by the appeals court. So that case continues with respect to Local 215. But the MPSO part of that case is concluded and the system is now engaged in making the retroactive payments. This was the matter that had to do with whether or not due to disability recipients would be entitled to get the 5.8% so-called pension contribution offset, the amount of pay increase that was authorized pursuant to labor contracts for people who were for the first time to be contributing towards a pension plan from their paychecks. And the active employees all got that. Initially, we were advised by the city attorney that we shouldn't be giving that increase to the disability retirees, but the courts have found otherwise with respect to the MPSO retirees, but not Local 215 so far. Lastly, we're working with Clifton Larson Allen, CLA, on the internal audit reports for finance and accounting, and they advise us and staff advises that we expect this to be finalized before the end of the year for presentation to the board. Information services, I'm happy to report item four, everything is going well in information services, and our IT team has done a great job in helping us with the remote work in our pandemic and also keeping on top of all the projects and on schedule for everything that they're doing. On administration, as I mentioned, the pension task force report, the final report was circulated to everybody, and the report itself makes no recommendations because the group, by its charter, by its intention, was supposed to be a cross-section of all the stakeholders. It was not going to be possible for the stakeholders to arrive at any consensus because they had conflicting interests. The report really outlines and analyzes potential actions for consideration by the city. So it was accepted and placed on file by the F&P, and I don't expect to hear too much out of that report. Item B, however, is actually was the first item on the Mayor's Task Force report. This is a draft bill that has not yet been introduced into the state legislature, but it's being developed by a coalition among the city, the county, the private sector, members of the Greater Milwaukee Committee, and others. I know that employee organizations of collective bargaining units have been consulted about this. And there's obviously regular negotiations going on as well. The bill contemplates additional sales tax revenues for the city and the county of Milwaukee for the purpose of paying off unfunded pension liabilities for both plans, and also for some property tax relief for the long-suffering property taxpayers in Milwaukee County, including the city. The bill has some conditions, though, for both the city and the county. The major ones for the city include what we refer to as a soft closure of both plans, both county and the city plan, such that all new hires would be enrolled in the Wisconsin Retirement System, otherwise known as the WRS, instead of into the county plan and instead of into seniors. If this bill were adopted, there's other conditions that also have not been, I guess, resolved and may not be resolved, and that's the reason this bill hasn't been introduced yet. I don't want to go too much into detail here because quite frankly, it doesn't appear that it's likely that this bill will be introduced. I think one of the major sticking points that I've been told is that there is a provision for what's called maintenance of effort that's being advanced by the sponsor of the bill that refers to staffing levels in both the MPD.
Jerry, this is Molly. May I interject for a quick second?
Yes.
Well, Molly,
is this a public document that I was privy to share?
Molly, I think you should let Mr. Allen finish before we comment.
Sure. My apologies, Mr. Accountant.
Okay, so the maintenance of effort is directed at staffing levels for both the police and fire department in the city of Milwaukee. There's other conditions as well, and my understanding is that whether the bill is going to be introduced or not depends on whether that can be resolved. The city would have to be willing to endorse the bill in order for it to go forward. That seems to be up in the air. The other impacts on the system would be the bill contains what I refer to as a statutory provision for a contribution and funding policy, and specifically it would provide for a funding policy that's based on an expected return on investments, or as we sometimes call it, a discount rate of 7.25%, and a amortization of unfunded liability over 30 years. Which is different than our current amortization period that was set by the board under the city charter. So, but again, those provisions don't actually take effect until unless the bill is introduced and adopted by the legislature and signed into law by the governor. So I'm just keeping everybody up to date on this. There's been a lot of discussion with the coalition members, and I think I've been requested this week to, send a letter, requested by the administration to send a letter to all of the other plan sponsors, MMSD and MPS, Wisconsin Center District, et cetera, because they have not been brought into the loop yet by the city. And so we want to begin to talk to them about that. But again, it remains to be seen if it's introduced. I did put in the package a copy of the bill because everybody's pretty much seen it, who's part of the coalition, including the collective bargaining units. And also there's some schedules here that are based on the actuary's model that the city purchased that would model how the funded status and the contributions would, mostly how the contributions would operate under the proposed bill, if no action was taken and our current policy for funding simply were maintained. And then there's a third one too that shows what would happen if the plan was closed according to actuarial standards of practice. And each of these is different with different outcomes. I don't think they're in here just for informational reference, that's all. But they were based on a model that was prepared by the actuary, again, at the behest of the budget office and purchased by the city of Milwaukee. And we've been furnished with a copy of it because we get lots of questions from the people that are working on this bill every day. So that's my report, I guess, at this point. If there's any questions, I guess I'd be happy to address them.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Allen. Ms. King?
Thank you, and again, my apologies to interject earlier. I just wasn't sure if this was a public document, and that was to share with them, you know, I don't know the status of the sponsor on this document, if this was still in, you know, private negotiation, and it was meant for a public meeting of such. So this is why I was asking Mr. Allen if this is something that was approved by the author of that bill.
We have been tracking this bill since March of 2020, when the mayor appeared in Madison. And there were also public comments in the Judd Led Committee about a year ago in December. It's really my obligation to keep this board informed. All the stakeholders seem to know about this, that it have been included in the discussion, even though, as I mentioned, the collective bargaining units, but and they've come to the ERS to ask for information, as I just mentioned, on a daily basis. And so I don't have the ability to keep this document secret from the Board of Trustees. They have to be appraised of what's going on. The other...
Oh, no, Gary, I'm not saying that you should have this secret from the trustee at all.
The other sponsors are going to be appraised in the next week. So this is this board has a fiduciary duty to look out for the interests of its members and beneficiaries. And I have an obligation to keep them informed. In fact, I've been admonished to do so in previous meetings. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay, Jerry, this is Molly again. This is not like not keeping us anything secret and informed. I just thought maybe we could have had the author of the bill or who's introducing the bill to come speak to the board on behalf of their bill that they're providing on behalf of the pension board. That was just my point. So that's why I was just curious if we had the authorization from the bill and, you know, providing all these documents without them speaking on behalf of their bill. That's why I was asking.
Thank you, Molly. There's one other thing I wanted to mention to the board about this. In the event this bill is introduced into the legislature, at that point, I think it becomes a significant issue for this board in terms of the funding of this plan. And Terry, you've got an exhibit to put on the screen there. The last time there was a legislative effort to amend the ERS funding policy was back in 2012 and 2013. The city amended the charter to adopt what we all refer to now as a stable contribution policy. You may remember when Mr. Nicolini was on the board then, he was the budget director. He pursued this option and it actually worked pretty effectively. It was adopted in 2013. And what you see on the screen now, go ahead back to the first page. At that time, the board requested that there be an analysis of the financial impact on the system of the proposed legislation. And that was done by our actuary at the time, which was Buck Consultants. Larry, who was also our current actuary, was Buck's actuary for our account as well. And so back in the summer of 2012, the board authorized a study of what the financial impact would be on the system if the legislation were adopted, which it subsequently was in the next spring. And so I put this on here to just make it known that I'm recommending that if this bill gets introduced in the legislature, it would be appropriate and actually prudent for the board to ask its actuary what would be the financial impact. I did mention there are some schedules in your packet today that sort of address this, but only on what we would call a deterministic basis, only assuming that the plan assumptions an 4% return, which is a statutory standard that's being proposed. This report would take a look at about 2,000 different economic scenarios and give the board a feeling for what the range of outcomes would be. Terry, I guess you could scroll down a little bit if you'd like to show them some of the charts. We do this routinely for asset liability management. Every 2 years, the investment people do this. Keep going. So what the chart does, what the charts do is indicate to the board what the likely range of outcomes would be for both the funded status of the plan and under a new funding policy, and also what the level of contributions from the employers would be. And so it's because the future is, of course, unknown, and this is the best technology that's available to us to determine, you know, what would be the likely, you know, potential range of outcomes. So if this does get introduced, I'm told that if it's going to be introduced, it would have to be introduced during the current session, which would be before the end of the first quarter next year. So then I would come back and recommend that we have the actuary begin to do this work to take a look at you know, what the potential outcome would be for the city and for the and for the plan. So it's just kind of a heads up on, you know, what's, you know, out there. I didn't want anybody to be surprised at the last moment that this thing, you know, becomes introduced and quickly adopted. It would not be appropriate to bring such a surprise into a board meeting.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Glusman.
Go ahead, Mr. Glusman.
Yeah, I just got one comment and then one question. First, what you just wrapped up with, Jerry, I at least as a board member, appreciate you bringing this to us. And I prefer to know about stuff as it's coming rather than after it's happened. It's good for all of us. I do not see the word confidential at all anywhere on this document. And I believe from at least a basic understanding of open records law that government draft documents, especially legislative actions, are supposed to be public because it's the public's work. So I don't think there's any breach here on your part of revealing anything. To the comment on that these that these bill sponsors should possibly meet with us, I totally disagree with that. That probably steps into the realm of lobbying, and we should not be doing that, nor is it our concern as a pension board how this funding occurs. It's just our lane is to make sure that this funding occurs, not the how, but that the effect that it does. So the people that are lobbying for this are the ones that are interested and responsible for the funding. Our responsibility just lies with making sure we set the parameters, the actuarial assumptions and whatnot, and the math that comes out of that is what it is. That all said, I do have a question. If you know, Jerry, there's a half a percent sales tax in the county right now. Are they talking about pushing this to 1% or to 1.5%?
I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that. That's a major part of the bill. The idea here is that that there would be a sales tax adopted by the county, and it would, I think I did mention, it would be split between the funding the for the unfunded liability of both the county and the city plans, and shared with it, a third of the money shared with the property taxpayers. So that's the idea, and this would generate some tens of millions of dollars. I think the estimate's currently running about $55 million initially, with maybe a 2 or 3% annual increase depending on economic realities as it plays out. But this money would be used to, by the terms of the bill, to set aside, you know, pay off unfunded liability. That's the only thing it could be used for.
Yeah, I saw the one-third breakdown, but I meant, do you know if this would pass in its current form, would we, as purchasers in Milwaukee County, see a 1.5% sales tax or a 1%? Because right now we have a half.
My understanding would be, I guess would be a whole percent higher.
Okay, okay, thanks, yeah, so thanks.
The other thing, to your comment, Mr. Klusman, and I, again, I should have maybe brought this up. One of the reasons I'm mentioning this to the board is, under the city charter, the current funding policy cannot be changed without the approval of this board. This board has to approve on a majority vote basis of 5 of the 8 trustees in order for Article 15, which is in fact the funding policy, to be changed. It has to be approved by this board and certified by the actuary as meeting actuarial standards of practice. And in fact, it goes on to say that it cannot be amended unless both of those things are present. Now, theoretically, the Common Council could change, can take away that authority, I suppose, but that's the point, would be a point of controversy. But that's the reason I'm reporting this, is because this board is a factor in the decision. Ultimately, if this legislation passes and the city charter has to be amended, pursuant to the legislation, this board would be involved in the deliberation to amend the city charter. And the other comment I would make is, I don't have any secrets from the trustees. Once they bring this U.S. staff into a matter and ask for information, give us information, I'm not really at liberty to conceal that from this board. And so people in the administration who want to contact us need to take that into account. If they don't want, once they share the information with me, they've shared it with the board. That's how I operate. That's how I'm supposed to operate, is my understanding. So anyway, that's my report.
Thank you, Mr. Yes?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, this is Assistant City Attorney Patrick McLean.
Go ahead, Mr. McLean.
Yeah, and just touching briefly on the records aspect of this, I believe the inclusion was intended for informational purposes and not necessarily for dissemination purposes. So I just wanted to clarify that the intent is just to keep the board apprised, but not necessarily that this document should be shared freely.
Right. The other thing I should remind, our board rules require that any contact with the media really be through the chair or maybe the executive director. But so the trustees should please be careful about any comments if you're contacted by the media. Although it doesn't, there haven't been any media inquiries as far as I know of on this legislation anyway. But that could happen if it gets introduced.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Any further questions or discussions on this issue? All right. Hearing none, we've come to the end of our agenda. The remaining items are informational. And if does anyone want to have any comments or discussions or inquiries concerning those items under informational? Okay, I guess we don't, not hearing any, it's time to entertain a motion to adjourn. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Klusman, a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Klusman. Do we have a second?
Bell, second.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Motion to adjourn having been made and seconded. Any objections to the motion? Hearing none, we stand adjourned at 10:44 a.m. Thank you all very much.